broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everybody, to Refresh Your Wealth with yours truly, Mark Kohler, and my amazing partner, Matt Sorensen. We're here today talking about tax and legal and small business and entrepreneurship and all the above. We're both trying to live the American dream ourselves and share that love and passion with all of you, our listeners. Thanks for listening in. And we hope as attorneys and accountants, tax lawyers, for lack of a better word, that we can give some great practical tips and advice today. And Matt, why don't you tell us about this amazing topic? And you had the chance to interview our guest today. This is going to be good.
Yeah. So we're talking about the art of the entrepreneurial pitch today. And I had opportunity to interview Kevin Harrington. As many of you may know, Kevin was one of the original sharks on Shark Tank. Turn on CNBC anytime after like 8 o'clock. It runs like for 12 hours.
you can switch between that and Shawshank Redemption.
So yeah.
And TNT.
And I love Shark Tank, and Kevin was on there for over, like, I think 160 episodes. He's also one of the founders of As Seen on TV, one of the original founders of the infomercial. He started his own company from $25,000 to turn into a $500 million business that was on the New York Stock Exchange. He was one of the co-founders of Entrepreneurs Organization, EO, if you're familiar with that. I mean, this guy has got a lot of great experience. And we talked to him about, and this is what the interview I had with him about, was about the entrepreneurial pitch. And how do you pitch someone to invest in your business like a shark? But also, how do you pitch your product and how do you pitch your company to people you want to try and work for you? There's a lot of facets of how a pitch is valuable to you and your business. So Kevin breaks that down. He has 10 points that he runs through that you'll want to know and take into account when you're making your pitch. It was awesome.
I love it. I wish I could have been there for the interview. He's a very popular guest in media today, and so we were lucky to get him, and Matt had the time to meet with him, so that's a great interview. He'll come up here shortly. We'll get to it right away. For those that are new to our show, we do weekly tax and legal tips, and many listeners have come up to me as I've kind of traveled the country and done some of my fall workshops, have said, Mark, you know, maybe the title of your show, I know I'm not going to really get much out of that, but I always listen in because your tips are awesome. And I was like, thanks so much. You know, that's good. So I may be cheap and not leave a big tip at the Thai food restaurant here in town, but I do leave good tax and legal tips here on the show. I leave them on the table, right? I leave it all on the table right here.
That's right. That's the value. That's where your value of tipping is, really.
Yeah. You know, on this your pitch, I just want to mention this too. I think all of you, I'm going to say this so boldly, all of you listening today have got to stay for the bulk of this show, because whether you're even just doing real estate and you're having to pitch a property or pitch to another potential partner or investor with you, maybe you don't have a restaurant and you're trying to sell a type of sandwich. I get that. But, you know, Matt and I do so many consultations with clients throughout the year, and I'll get on a phone call with someone and go, okay, tell me what your business is. What are you doing? Well, you know, I'm doing this. And I'm like, okay, now hold on. What do you sell? Where do you make money? You know, and sometimes I have to drag it out of people. And that's okay. You know, a lot of people are new to entrepreneurship. I don't want anybody to feel bad calling and talking to us like that. We're your coach. We're going to try to help you get over that hurdle. But this is important. So it's powerful.
Yeah, it's really good for anyone. And I think all of us, you know, love watching Shark Tank, and he kind of gets into the practical things that are going on in the minds of the person pitching and the person hearing it. It's really good to, I think, understand it from a real business level. And it's funny just to even some of the tips he gives, you know, about how to structure it and how to get someone really interested to invest in your business and what terms you offer them was really helpful, I think, for people to just think about what is someone looking for that wants to invest money. I thought it was really insightful.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, I'm anxious to spread that message and share that interview. It's fantastic. Okay. Well, let's get into our tax and legal tip. Matt, do you mind if I kick it off with a legal tip? No tax for me today. Legal, is that all right?
All right, dude. Yeah, dude, you can hit tax and legal tips, either one. I mean, they're all good.
All right.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Okay, so here's my legal tip today. And this was prompted from an email, a client earlier this week, and it was a good email, and it kind of got me thinking. I'm like, oh my gosh, if my client who's been with me for a couple years is asking this, this is something I need to talk about more. And I thought I'll bring this up on the radio show. So the question was that I got in this email was, Mark, hey, I've got this LLC, and I was at a little lunch business meeting, and someone said, oh, with an LLC, they're so easy. You don't need to do minutes. You don't need to do any corporate record keeping like a corporation. You just, that's what I love about LLCs. And then she was at another luncheon later that week, ironically, and some lawyer got up and said, oh yeah, these LLCs are getting pierced if you don't take care of them, and you got to be really careful. People, LLCs are not what you think. And she was like, Mark, so she sends this email. She's like, Mark, I'm so confused. What do I got to do to make sure this LLC doesn't, fall apart and it does what I think it's going to do? And so what I just a brief tip here, and of course this is a chapter or two in a couple of books of mine, the Tax and Legal Playbook, little plug there, sorry, my newest book out, has a whole chapter on maintaining your business entity and getting asset protection. I encourage all of you to download the audiobook, the Kindle, or get the print. You know, it's a really good chapter. But here's the gist of it. People, treat your LLC like you would treat your corporation. You should have a bank account. You should have a tax ID number. You should have a corporate book with membership certificates and operating agreement. You should be doing organizational minutes and annual meetings, minimum annual meetings. Matt and I, we have a couple LLCs together for some projects we're doing. We'll have regular meetings. In fact, Matt and I are planning one. Matt, 2 weeks from now, we're doing a board meeting. Right?
That's right. Board meeting. Exactly. Yeah. On the surfboards. Talking biz.
We are going to. It is. This is totally legit. We are rendezvousing in Southern California because we're both doing a little speaking gig back to back. And we are planning to literally go out and sit on the surfboards, have our kind of a quarterly year-end wrap-up meeting. We'll take notes, not once we get back to shore, but we're going to take notes. And then go grab some Pedro tacos after. Oh, you folks from SoCal, you know what I'm talking about. Or San Clemente Pedros. Mm. So we're going to get some tacos and some burritos.
I go for the breakfast burrito. The breakfast burrito. Yes. Yeah. Very good. Mm.
Powerful. So we're going to – but that's what we're doing. And we'll have regular quarterly meetings. We'll take notes and put them in our book. And folks, bottom line, if you have an LLC, you got to respect it. You got to take care of it. And I teach little videos on this on my website. And again, the book, you can read up on this. But if anybody tells you that your one sheet of paper for $50 on LegalZoom, thanks Robert Shapiro, is all you need to incorporate, it's not. And to LegalZoom's credit, when you get on their website, they have all the boxes you've got to check. You know, oh, I thought it was more cheaper and simpler than this. Well, once you get there, you find out it's more. And it is, because if you need an LLC, you got to do it right. And so we have a paralegal setup that does all those things, and you don't have to pay full service. And we got the attorney support if you need that support. So we'll help you get it done right. But folks, maintain it. Do your annual meetings or more. Keep good records. And you should treat your LLC like a corp, and it will protect you. It will. But if you don't, you could lose it. So.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, love the tip, Mark. Now I'm wading into the tax waters here, so I'm gonna give a tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right. Now, my tax tip, of course, relates to retirement accounts. Can you blame me?
I cannot blame you. And this is a good one. Matt gave me a little, heads up what he was going to do. This is good. I'm excited for that.
Yeah. So one thing I do love, and around Christmas time is a great time to get one of these, is a Roth IRA. Now, if you don't have a Roth IRA, but you have a traditional IRA, do you know that you can give yourself a Roth IRA? You can convert that traditional IRA, or maybe it's an old employer 401k, into a Roth IRA. Now, why are Roth IRAs cool? Because whenever you make money in them, it's totally tax-free. When you grow the account, when you get to retirement, the money comes out totally tax-free. You know, in your traditional account, keep in mind, when you start pulling money out of retirement, you're going to pay tax on the money you're taking out. But the Roth grows and comes out tax-free. So Roths are great. You can convert. This was a change about 4 or 5 years ago. Congress changed the rules that allowed anyone to convert. You used to only be able to convert to Roth if you were low income. Now, anyone, regardless of income, can convert from traditional to Roth. Now, there's a catch. You do have to pay tax. So if I have a $100,000 traditional IRA and I want to convert it to a Roth IRA, I'm going to pay tax on $100,000. Now, that's going to sting now. But in 10 years from now, you're going to love yourself for doing it because now you've grown the account. It's bigger, and the money's going to come out tax-free at retirement. So keep in mind, Roth IRA, you need to do that before December 31st if you're going to convert for 2016. And sometimes people will say, you know what, I'm going to do some of it in 2016, and then I'm going to do the other half, maybe do half and half, on January 1st and do it beginning of 2017. And that way you can split that conversion up between two different tax years. What do you like to call that, Mark?
Chunking.
that's Mark's chunking strategy. You take one chunk in 2016, one chunk in 2017, and it does keep your tax burden down. It splits it up between the tax years, so it can be a great strategy. And a lot of people convert at year end, and we'll do that, break it up between 2 years, or even break it up over more years. I mean, but right now is easy because you could get it all done within a month's time frame, just between 2016 and 2017.
Great tip and strategy. And people, remember, you can undo it. So in the spring, all of a sudden you realize, I can't afford the tax bill. You can undo it. But if you don't make the election by December 31st, then you miss out entirely. This is not one that you can just reincarnate create in April. You got to make the decision now, but you're allowed to undo it. So get it done, folks. Yeah, good stuff. And I got to say this too. I got to give some credit, a shout out on this chunking word and concept. I have adopted that chunking strategy in regards to Roth IRA conversions. Uh-huh. But I do have to give some love to the sweep group out in Hawaii, helping people get out of debt, pay down their mortgages. They are the first one that not only does chunk in the movie Goonies, bring back some memories.
We got to give him some credit too.
Yeah, Steven Spielberg, give him some love, for coming up with chunk. Great kid in Goonies. They chunk down debt. You take bites at your debt and pay it off in chunks. And so, a little love out there to our people in the islands and the sweep organization in Hawaii. And they're great, great folks out there. So Matt, we do last thing. We give all of our before we get to this amazing interview with Kevin, you have a question for our audience. And folks, if you're new to the show, we do a question every week, unless it's open forum. We do a question, and the first one to respond. And many of you may think, someone's already done it. You never know. On your smartphone, just a quick little email with an answer allows you to win a copy of either mine or Matt's book, free of shipping, autographed, sent to you, a $20 plus value on various book outlets online. So this is a big deal. So if you would like to answer this question, you can email us and be the first one to respond. But Matt, you've got the question?
Yeah. Now, Mark, this is, it's the season of giving. So we've got a charitable question of the week this week, right?
I like it.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Should I pose it? Or do you want to pose it?
No, I think you had it ready to go. So I was just kind of, you were teeing it up for me, and I was just kind of like teeing it back up for you there.
Okay, so, I'm good.
This is the charitable question of the week. It's,
We work on this together, and remember, we don't have a producer, folks. We are open to that. If any of you want to volunteer to be our producer and provide rock stars and help us, we're just attorneys here. We're idiots. Okay, so now here's the deal. Here's the question. Now, if you get invited to a charitable dinner during this holiday season, and we know many of you may be, we'll have some more charitable tips. I think we need to hit that in the next couple of weeks. But here's this one. Let's say you go to a charitable dinner, and it's $100 a plate. $100 a plate. And you're wondering, and they give you maybe even a receipt for $100. You've got it on your credit card, and you want to deduct it, and you give it to your accountant and say, I went to this dinner, and it was $100 a plate. Your accountant may say, oh, okay, well, that's cool. Let's get a little few more facts here. Did you buy anything there, or what did it include? And what was the value of the dinner? So if you say, well, the food value was probably $40, and maybe that was indicated on the receipt, or maybe that's just kind of what the common value of what a meal weight be or the per diem in that area. So let's just assume that the meal value was $40, but it was $100 a plate fundraiser. Here's the question. What is your tax deduction? Is it $100? Is it $40? Is it $60? What is your tax deduction when you pay $100 a plate for a fundraising dinner when the value of the food is $40? First one to respond to Mark, M-A-R-K, at kkoslawyers.com, or Matt, M-A-T, at kkoslawyers.com. You win a free copy of the book of your choice. And folks, that is our question of the week.
All right. Well, this is a time of year people go to those charitable dinners. I swear, some of those meals I've had, I think the value is $5. You're like, I know this is for charity, but I don't even want to eat the thing. It's like we just stop at In-N-Out on the way home.
Yeah, touche.
But
I love it. Well, right. And we've got to work on our jingle for that. I tried to spice up that closing for the question of the week.
Yeah.
We need a ba-ding, ding, cha,
I got to rip out the guitar. Over the holidays is when I play the guitar probably the most. It's because it's when I used to, like, as a kid when I'd get my new guitar equipment. So it's kind of nostalgic for me to just rip out the guitar. So I got to throw down a little riff there for question of the week. I just got to do it. I got to get it done.
Yeah. Well, anything you play on the guitar, I'm listening. I'll just sit there, in Indian style at the feet of Matt Sorensen and I'll just hear you play your tune.
Yeah.
Well,
the front row is reserved for the ladies though. So you might be in second, third row. Just
second or third row.
Fair warning. Yeah. All right.
Fair warning. Well, let's do this now. Let's take we're going to take a cut over to this amazing interview with my partner, Matt Sorensen and Kevin Harrington.
All right. Well, I'm excited to welcome on Kevin Harrington. He is one of the original sharks on Shark Tank. Also, founder of As Seen on TV. Very well known in the business world as a speaker, an expert. Gets a lot of media appearances. Kevin, excited to have you on today's show.
Hey, Matt. Great to be here. Thanks for having me. Hope we have some fun for all the entrepreneurs that are out there today.
Yeah, that's what this show's about. Now, we're going to be talking about the art of the entrepreneurial pitch, and I can't think of anyone better to have on this show who's seen a lot of pitches, who knows how to give a good pitch, and has, I guess, kind of gone through everything in making sure that, you've probably accepted some pitches, done some deals, and seen how those turn out, too. So I just want to get your feedback initially here, and we'll go through some points on giving some people some pointers on how to pitch their business. So
right.
Why don't you give us maybe some of your first couple of initial thoughts on that, and maybe your background, too, as it relates to hearing pitches and what makes a good pitch?
Okay, so just I'll give you a quick thumbnail on, my 30-plus years. I've been in this As Seen on TV business, and long before Shark Tank, I was going to about 30 trade shows a year, and this dates back into the mid 80s. So I'll never forget, I was at the first time I went to the Chicago Houseware Show, 1986, a McCormick Center in Chicago, and I've been to I've been to 29 out of 30 houseware shows, and I missed 1 year because I was deathly ill. Okay. So that's just one show. And what, you know, what you do at a show, you walk booth to booth. What are you doing? You're taking pitches. These people, I'm going to find a home run product. People are pitching me their product. So little did they know, you know, I was investing. I mean, look, what were they there to do? They wanted me to place an order, to invest my money in ordering their product. But my model was, I'm going to put it on a shopping channel. I'm going to do an infomercial. I'm going to put it on TV. I'm going to sell it to a catalog company. Mm-hmm. So I started back in the mid 80s, the houseware show, the hardware show, the fitness show. This is where I hung with Tony Little. Then we go to the health show with Jack LaLanne. Then we go, boom, here we are at a trade show. George Foreman's there. Wow, what can we do with George? Hey, George, what's your passion? I love cheeseburgers, right? So that, you know, this is how some of these things started back in the early days. You know, and fast forward to today, you know, I'm still doing these houseware shows and hardware shows and beauty shows, and, you know, but now I'm doing them more formally. So when I went to the Cosmoprof beauty show recently, I have a format there called Beauty Pitch. Mm-hmm. And we took the pitch, myself and John Paul DeJoria, he's the owner of Patron Tequila, as well as John Paul Mitchell, hair care. And right. So John Paul, myself, and two other sharks, you know, and they weren't sharks from Shark Tank, but let's use that term, were taking pitches and in front of a crowd of 1,000+ people. So that's more of a formal way of taking pitches. But basically, I go back to the mid-'80s, hitting all these shows, taking all these pitches. And by the way, if I'm walking a trade show and somebody doesn't grab me, get my attention right away, I'm off to the next booth, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things I talk about is having, you know, when you're pitching, you've got to create some kind of an opening tease factor to get their attention. And this is much like when I do a direct response spot, people don't tune in to commercials. People do not tune in to watch a 30-minute infomercial, right? Mm-hmm. It's like you wake up on Saturday morning and say, wow, can't wait to get that infomercial today. No, you're watching the news. The news is over. What happens? Billy Mays comes out. He's got a meatball sandwich. He bites it, and just then grease drips out of it onto his shirt, and he says, uh-oh, has this ever happened to you?
Yeah.
That's six seconds of a tease. It's the opening attention getter, grabber. Now, wait a minute, I got to watch the rest of this. And by the way, 30 minutes later, yeah, I watched the rest of it. Why? Because it was engaging, and it started with a tease. It went to a problem, and then they solved the problem with a solution. Okay? And so this is how you go about starting with this and then moving to the next step. Then when you solve that problem, you're then giving people a step-by-step process of the benefits of the product, the unique positioning of the product, and the problem-solving aspects of the product. So I know I'm talking a little fast here because we got entrepreneurs that love to listen, but I want to get as much in as we can. So
let me break that down.
Dopamine sequencing.
Let me break that down. I think there's a lot of great points you had there. First, you talk about in any pitch having a opening tease factor, something that's drawing you in. Then you mentioned also coming up, showing what the problem is, and then why your product or service is solving that problem as well. So I think that those are the first key parts of the pitch. And I think a lot of people, when they talk about their business, and this doesn't have to be about getting an investor necessarily in your business. This could be selling people to be an employee in your business, recruiting top talent to come to your business. Right. You know, how do you talk about and pitch your business to other people? And I love those tips on getting people's attention with that tease factor. I mean, that's been you know, something in marketing for a long time. And then talking about the practical problem in the industry and your solution to fix that problem. What have you seen? Maybe what's been one of your most interesting examples when someone's given you a pitch where you've just been like, wow, that was a great pitch that really got my attention fast, or they really did a quick job in explaining the problem and solution? I think a lot of people sometimes get too long-winded, you know, with their they got too many charts, or like they're getting way too into the detail about what they're trying to do that they lose someone who doesn't understand their business or their product 100% yet. But maybe you've had some quick examples of some really good pitches that you've seen in your experience.
Yeah, so I'll give you, I mean, one of the greatest example I use, it is actually on Shark Tank. A woman came out and her name is Rebecca Riscotti. She says, so good morning, sharks. You know, how many, you know, there's a lot of cat owners in the world, and cats, dealing with a cat is messy, dirty, stinky, unhealthy. They have litter boxes. And so she's showing the problem, right? This is, you know, first of all, litter costs a lot of money. It's something you got to replace all the time. So it's costly. It's unhealthy. It's bad for the environment. It's all the, it's problem, 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 right?
Yeah,
the solution, introducing City Kitty. It's a cat toilet training system. All right. So it teaches the cat how to jump on the toilet, go to the bathroom, and eliminate the need for litter. Okay.
Yeah.
So, now, throw your litter box away. Save thousands of dollars. You don't have the cat jumping through the dirty litter and then through the house in, you know, in plush pile carpeting, you know, with, you know, stuff all over its paws, right?
Right.
You know, so, and babies are roaming around the house after the cat just went through a dirty litter box. So you've got a health aspect, you got a money savings aspect, you got a good for the environment aspect, because litter is bad to throw it into the into the environment. So she, and then what was the tease factor? She starts off a cat jumping into a bathroom, jumping up on top of the toilet, going to the bathroom, jumping down, boom. You talk about getting your attention. That's, you know, if you ever saw the movie with Robert De Niro, Meet the Fockers, there was a cat jumped on the toilet, right?
Right,
it was a funny moment. So, you know, this is, you know, this was a great pitch, because it's, it for anybody that owned a cat, they were definitely listening.
Yeah.
And it's a money saving health aspect. It's, you know, good for the environment kind of a pitch. And then there's a great magical transformation also, because now you do away with that dirty part of the wherever you kept your litter box. I mean, I know I personally haven't owned a cat, but I've been to homes where they have it right in the kitchen. And, you know, so like, here's this, you know, you're cooking food and this and that, and there's all this stinky, smelly litter, you know? So, you know, it's like there's a magical transformation aspect of that also. So that one was one that I loved, and kind of a crazy kind of a product. And whether you buy it or not, you know, that's another question. But this lady sold millions and millions of dollars worth of City Kitty. So it ended up being a big winner. So
that's a great, great example. Now, I think one thing some people struggle with is knowing what to ask for. You know, maybe they can explain their business or the product, they can get your attention, but they don't know what to ask for. And I think, you know, you see this, and we see this from our perspective as lawyers advising clients. I see this, you know, clients are asking me, well, how much ownership should I give up? You know, how much money should I ask for? And what type of control should I give up? I know you've just gone through that after the pitch type thing, and this is part of the pitch too, I guess, is how do you formulate what you ask for, and what advice do you have for people in getting what you want out of your pitch and asking for the right thing from whoever you're pitching, whether it's trying to get someone's money or someone's support or, you know, whatever it may be?
Okay, so, you know, this is what I think would be good. I'm going to kind of list there's about 8 or 10, 12 steps in giving a good pitch. I'm going to kind of just list them, throw them out, and then I'm going to tell you how you use it to get what you want at the end. So I mentioned you got to get their attention. So you start with a teasing, opening, problem. Okay. Then you want to solve that problem, but you have to, so that's number, so you tease them with a problem. Then number two, you solve the problem. Number three, you show me the unique positioning of the product? Because it is it unique enough such that it solves the problem in a unique fashion like no other product or service does?
Yeah.
So that unique aspect's important, right? So now, then I want to hear, and I mentioned it, magical transformations. Is there any kind of, if you have a product that's unique, it solves a problem, and it provides magical transformation, people are going to be able to understand it and visualize it very easy. So mm-hmm. I say you want to, you know, so this is kind of step four, is what is the magical transformation, and can you show me any demos or multifunctionality to that product? So show me that it does this, it does this, and it does that. So, you know, that is kind of like, you know, magical transformations, number four. Can mm-hmm. you demo it, number five? Is it multifunctional, number six? Number seven, do you have some great testimonials that prove that this really works? So that's always important. So now, you know, all of this is walking you through this process, but at the very end of all of this, you know, you need mm-hmm. some kind of an irresistible offer. And that gets to the question you just asked. What, you know, how do you get this shark to put the money up, to make the deal, or the person you're hiring to quit their other job, join you? Or if you're creating this pitch for your website to get people to want to buy your product, then, you know, at the end, you've got to have some kind of an offer, right? Mm-hmm. Now, in the case of, say, a Shark Tank, where you're looking to raise money for your business, it's some kind of an offer that's irresistible to join your business in some kind of investment where you own equity and you become a partner, right? Now, what would an irresistible offer be there? Let me walk through some thoughts there. So number one, if you watch some of the, you know, and again, I've done, you know, I did 175 segments on Shark Tank. There's, you know, the show runs on CNBC now for hours a night, every night. So you can right. watch yeah. old episodes if you ever get,
yeah, that's
you know,
great. Yeah.
get tired, you know, want to go get some Shark Tank, you know, activity. But so one of the smartest sharks, he's also one of the toughest sharks, is O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing you'll notice about him, he'll say, okay, I'll give you the $100,000, but I don't want just 10% equity, because a minority owner of a small business may never see profits. And this is one of the mistakes that I've made. I have, you know, I've invested in small businesses and I end up with a minority equity, and it's like every month, oh, well, you know, hey, here's our sales. And, you know, we had a little bit of a profit, but we're not making distributions. We need the money for cash flow yeah. and for more inventory, right? So mm-hmm. year after year goes by, you never get your money back, right?
Mm-hmm.
O'Leary says, and this is why I say make an irresistible offer. If you go on Shark Tank and you say, I need $100,000 and I'm willing to accelerate the payback by giving the investor 100% of the profits until he gets his $100,000 back, and then you still own equity, or I'll give you a dollar for every cupcake sold until you get your money back, and then you own equity, or then the deal changes. Some I call it an accelerated payback.
Yeah.
And that is something that is an irresistible offer. And this is something now that somebody like O'Leary kind of asks for. So, you know, I think that it's important that you create a buy now incentive, right? Or yeah. in the case of a product, but wait, there's more. If you order right now, within the next 30 minutes, we'll also give you this and this and this, but you have to act now. So, mm-hmm. you know, you can't just, you know, the other day a friend sent me, he did a radio commercial, and it was a 60-second radio commercial. And at the very end, it was just like, you know, it just ended. And yeah. I'm like, there was no offer. There was no call to action. There was no mm-hmm. get this for free if you call, or if you go to our website, or, you know, you've got to get people to take action. And this is where sometimes people fall down. So mm-hmm. one more important point, and then I'll let you jump in here, is that in the case of cash and raising money and stuff, it's always important to show where you need the money, what the use of that proceeds is, because I'm, you know, what an investor doesn't want to think is, okay, you need $100,000. Is that going in your pocket? No, it's going in to build the business. It's going into buying some assets or building some software that will generate revenue. So we invest the $100,000, it brings back $1,000,000. So you got to show me that there's a good plan to use the assets that we're investing so that the business is being built and you're taking the business to the next level. So, you know, I think this is important. So hopefully that answered some of your questions.
Yeah, I love your 10th step list there, those 10 points. And it's interesting, just I think, you know, my lawyer day job and consulting with clients, I mean, you talk about a lot of terms and incentivizing someone to invest money. And it's these are terms that you'll see a lot in contracts that are, you know, for investment in companies, a return of capital, a use of proceeds clause. I mean, these are things that a lot of smart investors are asking for. And that I love that your commentary there about offering that up for people to get them, make them that irresistible offer. Now, I know your time's short here, so I just wanted to talk about one other thing here, which is, I mean, your background's excellent, and a lot of what people know you from maybe media, Shark Tank, or As Seen on TV. You also had your own background in starting a company that went public, Quantum International, and had a $500 million business. You also started were a co-founder of entrepreneur organization EO. We have a lot of clients who are members of EO. Yep. And I think that's a good resource. Maybe you give a little tip for people on EO, and if entrepreneurs out there listening, how they could possibly get involved in EO or why it might be a good fit for them.
Sure. So it was 1987, and I was hanging out with a bunch of young entrepreneurs. I was a lot. Today I'm an old entrepreneur. Okay? No, but you know, back then we were young, right? We were, forget exactly how old I was, but it, you know, I think I was maybe in my 30s at the time, but, you know, Michael Dell was one of the guys, Ted Leonsis. Ted went on to become number two at AOL. He sold his company, Redgate Communications, to AOL, and he became the second largest shareholder. I think he's a billionaire now, and obviously Dell's a billionaire. We were all hanging out, young entrepreneurs are like, hey, you know, we've all had some success. We've made some mistakes. We've learned some things. Mm-hmm. We should start a little organization. So we put some money into an account, started what was then called Young Entrepreneurs Organization, YEO, and said, let's create this organization where we're going to do regular meetings. We started like quarterly, and then we had a big annual one, and then they became monthlies, and then we had chapters locally. And this grew, and as we got older, we had to change the name to EO because the young side of us, we started getting older. And
you guys still wanted to go, huh?
You had to be under 40 in the beginning, and then it was like, well, let's make it 50. And now I think they've removed that even because I just hit 60 just recently. So I'm like, like I said, I'm an old entrepreneur. But anyway, EO is now in 45 countries, 150 cities with chapters all around the world. When I go to Shanghai, I put the word out, and boom, 30 people showed up at lunch. Okay. And and I'm like, hey, I need some help. This is what I'm doing. And all of a sudden it's like, man, what an unbelievable experience to see the wheels turning and all the entrepreneurs helping. And so this is what it's a camaraderie of entrepreneurship all around the world. It does cost to join. You know, there's a cost to operate an organization. It's a nonprofit organization. So, you know, I've spent a lot of money being part of EO for many, many years. So there's no, you know, benefit back to me personally, other board founding members. And it's been a great situation. So, you know, I love it. The people are great. I was in Melbourne, Australia at the EO group a year ago, and that was a fantastic group. I was in Shanghai. I was in India. I was in London. I was, you know, no matter where you go, generally there's going to be an EO organization that you can either join or tune into. So I highly recommend it. EO.org. I think, you know, you better check that out for me, the actual website. So, but if you Google entrepreneurs organization, EO, It's the nonprofit largest entrepreneurial organization in the world.
Yeah, well, Kevin, I really appreciate you coming on today and recording with us. And I want to just give out Kevin's website to everybody. It's kevinharrington.tv. He's got a blog on there, his speaking, if you want to have him speak, his books, a lot more of his background you can find on kevinharrington.tv. And Kevin, I really appreciate it. Thanks for being on with us today.
Matt, it was fabulous. I hope the entrepreneurs had some good content here. And just one last thing, I'll give an email also for anyone that's out there. This will get to me personally, and this is for your group only, kevin@kevinharrington.tv. So if anybody wants anything, mention this particular event, and I'll make sure we get back to them and provide quality back and forth updates to take them to the next step.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Kevin. We appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another hour of Refreshing Strategies to Better Live Your American Dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.